Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Glorious Rugby Podcast. I'm your co-host, John Fitzpatrick, and joining me is my co-host, Alistair Kirschpool, AKP. Fresh off a windswept game there at the Maryland Soccerplex. Frustrating game against San Diego Legion. AKP, welcome to the show again. How you doing? How's your face feeling? Did you get a little windburn?
I maybe got a little bit of whimper, but honestly, on the season's ticket holder's side, it was pretty okay. I feel bad for any of the general admission people, though. That side of the field was getting really hammered with the wind.
And I know we were excited. We wanted a little more earth, wind, and fire because of one of the new owners, but we did not need all that wind, right? I'm like, come on.
We need a balance of earth, wind, and fire. Not too much of any of those things is a problem.
I swear I was going to have a better earth, wind, and fire joke, but that's what came out, but that's okay. Anywho, of course, we're talking about the gusting, swirling winds all around the Maryland Soccerplex on Saturday. Just a funky day, a funky weather weekend, you know, deluge of rain Friday night into Saturday. It stopped raining by early Saturday afternoon. The field looked pretty dry, looked pretty good.
Yeah, it drained
well.
Then,
of course, the winds picked up, and of course, we're talking about All Glory DC's Week 4 loss to San Diego Legion. We're going to talk about that. Then we're going to look ahead to Week 5 against Anthem RC. That's got to be a get-right game and a bonus point win get-right game as we look ahead to Week 5. AKP, can you believe it? We're already a quarter through the regular season. We've had four games through the regular season. A ton of drama. Let's start first with, we got to touch on this because I know the news broke after we recorded, and we did cover a lot of it last week, but anything else you need to say right now about the suspension to Jameson Fond on a Schultz?
I mean, it's one of those situations where I think I've made my point pretty clear. If anyone's just a listener and doesn't read the Glorious Rugby website, I put up an article explaining, breaking down the silliness of the suspension and its questionableness from a sort of laws perspective for rugby. But at this point, you know, I've made that point. Clearly, it has fallen on deaf ears as far as the disciplinary committee is concerned. They stuck with a 5-week suspension, which... So they determined it was a mid-range offense, and then they mitigated that down significantly because of the circumstances to the minimum of 4 weeks, and then because he has prior history, they bumped that up to 5 weeks, which is not unreasonable if the penalty was even warranted in the first place, which it really wasn't. But regardless, we've heard from the team that they've sort of exhausted all of the options they have for appeal, and they'll just be accepting the suspension as is, which, you know, it's disappointing, but there's a certain point in which you just have to say what's done is done, you know, fair or not. We just have to move forward with this. It's really unfortunate for Jama and for the team. I think, you know, he was really playing well in the first part of this season. We're definitely going to miss him.
And I don't want to belabor this point too much, but my concern is just moving forward now. And what happens if, again, because Jama played, and this is why he's been capped by the men's Eagles. This is why he's the captain for Old Glory DC, because he plays rugby hard, because it's a hard effing sport, and you want your back row players to run aggressively, to tackle hard. What happens next if he finds himself in another situation similar to this, that kind of gray area, right? Are we going to have to put like a governor on him? You know what I mean? Like the, you know, the little thing that caps how fast the golf cart goes, you know, taking away from the aggressiveness that is Jama. Because, and I'm tired of this, you know, oh, he had priors nonsense. That was a year and a half ago, right? Named captain. I know we're repeating ourselves here. No disciplinary issues whatsoever last year. He finds himself in a bang-bang situation. People keep bringing up the priors. But what happens next? What happens if he finds himself in a similar type of situation where it's a card or something like that? What kind of suspension are we looking at then after that? And yeah. I don't want to derail this episode, but like, we're talking about a capped eagle here. We're talking about a captain of an MLR team. No ill intent. I'm just frustrated about the decision, and I'm frustrated at people saying, oh, he's a dirty player. He had an unfortunate incident that happened 2 years ago. He's made amends. Yes, there's a history there, but come on.
And I think we have to keep in mind, like, you know, judge him for what he's actually doing wrong. And, like, yeah, he was a hot-headed player a few years ago, and he got in a fair amount of trouble in those days for making reckless, hot-headed plays. That wasn't what happened. Like, yeah, it was an unfortunate incident. Yeah, you know, if you're going to suspend on that sort of thing, then, like, okay, you've got to do what you got to do. But, like, it's not... You don't look at that and go, you know, is this behavior where it's like, oh, this is symptomatic of a bigger problem? He's regularly right. putting himself in these circumstances, and, you know, this time it went bad, and so we've got to punish the pattern of... He doesn't have a pattern of behavior of this sort of thing. And, like, he's got, what, 20 games without any sort of disciplinary issues? Like, at a certain point, you have to say, the guy's reformed, and yeah, he got unlucky here. Because the thing is, even if you think that he should have got red carded, that somehow it's a clear red card and that he should get suspended, it clearly wasn't, you know, a dramatically bad play where he was making, you know, especially when we compare it to one of the matches of this weekend where...
Let's talk about it. Let's jump. We're going off the rails already, but let's talk about it. Everyone clearly saw it. There was clear intent there. From my point of view, right, and I like Justin Besson. I think he's a good player.
Yeah, let's describe the play first.
Yeah, there's a ruck, Seattle Houston game, awesome game Friday night. Like, if you missed that one, go back and watch it. Fantastic. Early in the match, there's a ruck going on. I'm pretty sure it was Justin Besson. I hope I don't have that wrong, but he was at the edge there. Some guy from Seattle was kind of grabbing at his leg. You know, things that they do. From what we saw on the screen, he picked up his leg and tried to kick the player. Now, he did not make a connection. It hit the shoulder, right? And I think that's what the TMO and the referee were like, oh, well, he missed. So there was clear intent there.
Yeah. It was a high kick. Like, that wasn't just my foot happened to be near him. Like, he had to lift his leg up pretty far to, like, it's tough to even make that sort of kick. Like, it takes a lot of effort and intent. And it's one of those, and you look at players like, you know, Blair Cowan a couple of weeks ago had a yellow card and very nearly had a second yellow card. And it was sort of, you know, he was really pushing the limits the whole game of what he was allowed to do and, you know, hitting high and hitting... You know, that's the sort of dangerous play where you're like, that to me speaks of a player who's just decided he's going to play recklessly. And you look at Jama, and he just gets in an unfortunate circumstance, and somehow, you know, he gets in an unlucky circumstance, and somehow that's 5 weeks suspension. And, you know, this guy, you know, Justin Besson literally tries to kick a guy in the head. And just because he doesn't actually make contact with the head, somehow that's not even a card. They didn't. Mm-hmm. They gave a penalty for that.
Yeah,
it's insane. It's mind-boggling. Now, of course, we could. You know, it's Tuesday.
Yep.
It's the day that disciplinary results get released. It could be that he was cited for it anyway.
So
yes, but I think that had to do with some appeals and all that stuff. In general, they come out on Tuesday. And so, you know, it could be that the disciplinary committee says, actually, no, that was bad and he should be suspended. And I really hope he is. Because the thing is, if we're going to hold Jama to this level, and this is part of my complaint, is if we're going to hold Jama to this level, we need to hold everyone to this level. And it was like a couple of years ago when Jama was getting his 10-week suspension for having a second red card in the season. You also had another player Jerry Lobashanya that season also had two red cards, didn't even get mentioned in his disciplinary committee meetings that he had a history. And it's like it's his second red card of the season. Like, if you're going to hold teams to this, or if you're going to hold players to this level, do it consistently. Like, you want to be, you know, let's say we, you know, player safety is of the utmost importance, and we just want to, you know, even if it's not really their fault, we want to really crack down hard on all of this sort of stuff, then do that. Then, like, apply that evenly. get all of the players who are acting recklessly, get all of the players, you know, regardless of whether they actually make head contact or not, get all of the players who are making, you know, punish everyone equally. It just feels like Jam has had the short end of the stick here. He's been, you know, it's only unfair because of how the other the other players are not facing that same level of punishment.
We said we weren't going to get into it too much, but we certainly did there. So I guess we have to move on here. So we will. So, of course, Jam has got 5-game suspension, so he served one of it. So we'll see him back against, I think that's week 9 or 10 against the Miami Sharks. But moving on, AKB, we talked about it. We're already a quarter of the season into this. I want to go through the standings really quickly. Week 4 standings, New England, they're atop 15 points. Then Nola Gold with 15 points. Chicago Hounds, they have 7 points. And then we've got Old Glory DC with 7 points. The difference there is Chicago has a better point differential. Miami in 5th place with 6 points. And Anthem 0-4 with 1 point. AKP, we're a quarter through the season. Give me your grade on Old Glory DC so far.
I'm going to put it at a C plus. I think so passing, but only just. Because I think we've seen a lot of really good things from Old Glory. There's a lot of high potential, and when they actually put it all together, I think they have the chance to be a really, really good team. But they have yet to really put it all together. And they put enough of it together against New England to come away with a win there, but you know, it's hard to rank a one win out of 4 game streak as a anything much more than a C.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think we've got 3 more quarters to go. It's not how you start a season, it's how you end it. We're right in the thick of things. I think C plus is probably about right. And hey, we've got a huge opportunity here for a get right game. Week 5 against Anthem. But before we get there, we got to break down this game. Week 4 match against the San Diego Legion. AKP, lineup came out. What were your initial thoughts when you saw it?
So it was interesting to, I mean, Willie T in the starting lineup again. Danny Tuisotala on the roster for the first time all season. And we saw Quinton Newcomer come back in the front row, I think, and Ethan McVay, maybe injured, possibly, or just not there right now, which, you know, I think that was a loss. Connor Buckley starting in his place, and Perry Humphreys also injured yet again, so it was John Rizzo starting on the wing.
Yeah, and look, hey, it was great to see Danny back.
Yeah. It was good to see him back and have you know, we talked so much last week about, like, where is he? And then it turned out he was going to be on the roster. And they sort of teased it in the advertising for the match on social media with a picture of Danny. And it's like, okay, now you got to put him in the roster.
Well, so it's funny you say that, because did you see the image that Old Glory DC put out today? Do you see the future athlete?
I did not, no.
Another player who hasn't appeared yet this season, but seems like he will. Do you know who I'm referring to?
I don't.
Mike DeBoulos.
Oh, Mike DeBoulos. No. Mike Weir and Mike DeBoulos. I think they're pretty much the only two. And Dakota Worth.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's not many players we haven't seen yet.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true. Hey, look, Colin Gross stepped in, right?
Yeah.
For JAMA.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. After we just talked about all the JAMA stuff, and I completely forgot that he was out, and Colin Gross really did a good job stepping up.
Yeah. I think he had over 20 tackles. I think maybe 22 officially. Depends on, you know, who you're talking with, James DeLay or MLR Stats. I can never tell which one is the correct one, but I'm going to go with over 20. So he stepped in, had 20 tackles. Good for anyone who may have used him in fantasy. I think he's a free agent. But yeah, a couple observations there. Of course, my boy Willie T starting. Great to see. Certainly conditions were not great for running rugby. But AKP, right? We mentioned Earth, Wind, and Fire and the too much wind. What were one of your biggest observations, takeaway from this forgettable loss against San Diego?
Yeah, so it really was one of those sort of tale of two halves. In the first half, it played out pretty much like we normal rugby, like we expect it. And then the second half, we just got pinned in our own end and had barely any possession and barely any territory. In fact, if you look at the possession and territory stats for the whole game, it shows like both of them show like 70-30 in favor of San Diego. Well, that was about 50-50 at halftime. And then suddenly, and so that means that it must have been incredibly in their favor, you know, like 90-10 in their favor in the second half. And it was both, I mean, there were some promising parts of that. Like, let's start with the good thing. The defense held up incredibly well in that second half. I mean, they held them to one try in the first half and then, you know, held them scoreless despite having pretty much unlimited possession and unlimited territory. Like, they had as many opportunities as they wanted, San Diego did, in Old Glory's half. Like, it was just, I mean, Old Glory had basically no possession outside of their own half. And yet they held them scoreless for the first 22 minutes of that second half. And that is very impressive. And it's sort of borne out in the stats. You see a 90% tackle rate, which is exactly the sort of number that the coaches will be targeting. Like, that's a really good number. Anytime if you can get above 90%, that's fantastic. But really, 90% is about the most you can really expect from a balanced professional game. And, you know, 10 dominant tackles, and certainly that seemed to be the case from the stands. It looked like they kept pushing them back. They really didn't break the gain line that often. They seemed to spend a lot of time sort of going side to side and not going forward. And it was some great stuff defensively. And like you mentioned with Colin Gross getting 22 tackles, and I think, you know, Corey Daniel was also over 20 tackles. I think it was Bavaro was over 20 tackles. Can't quite remember off the top of my head right now. But, you know, there was a lot of good tackling going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess what, you know, thinking back, what bothers me a little bit about the game was that Old Glory had the wind going with them, right, in the first half. So, you know, they're kicking and they're getting a little more distance. Knowing that the second half, it was going to be a reverse, that we're going to be kicking into the wind. It just felt like, okay, we got 11 points on the board in the first half, had a, you know, a halftime lead of 4 points. It just seemed like there were more points to be taken out there. And obviously hindsight is 20/20, because we saw what happened in the second half, where Old Glory just couldn't get the ball out of their own zone. And a lot of that may have been the wind, but knowing that was the case, tactically, should we have done something different? And were they trying to? Like, it's not like the coaching staff didn't know that, right? But it just seemed like we were just kind of butting our heads up against the wall here, trying to box kick and all that stuff. AKP, I know you don't like the box kick. Go off here.
I don't mind the box kick thing. I haven't complained about box kicks all year because we've been putting up sensible box kicks. I mean, they have a place in the game. And that place is to put something high and contestable. When you're about midfield, you put up something high and contestable so that, you know, chase it, so you have the chance of either catching it or at least putting them under pressure, and then you have the chance that they make the mistake and you get to recover it anyway. But there's also times not to put up a box kick, and that is, you don't want to put the ball high when the wind can just grab it like that. You want to keep your kick low, and you want to drive it into the wind as much as possible. Get as much distance as you can, because distance is and we saw kicks pretty much going backwards. Like, that wind was incredible that day, and it was incredible the whole game. I mean, there was a vendor tent at one point that blew over. It was some crazy stuff, that wind, and they knew it. And yet, it was still high-floating box kicks. You know, Jason Robertson kicking for the sideline, he wasn't really being very ambitious with it. He was just, you know, doing normal clearance kicks, and it just doesn't work in this weather. And the fact that they smashed their heads against this kicking strategy for like 20, 30 minutes in the second half, it was when it was obviously not working. And I do have a bone to pick with the coaching staff with that. I mean, Graydon Bowd is by far the best open play kicker we have on the team, and yet he sat on the sideline for most of the game. He was the one who, I mean, he's been putting in 50-22s, he's been getting a huge amount of distance. Like, put him in the game, get him doing those clearance kicks, especially when you see things not working.
Yeah, would you suggest putting him in for Robertson or Hoyland, who I thought was covered?
Put him in for Rizzo. Move Hoyland to the wing. Hoyland's perfectly capable of playing on the wing. Stick Hoyland on the wing, because he, I mean, yet again, another fantastic game from him, 136 meters gained. He leads the team in meters gained, even though he's only played two games.
Yeah.
So stick him on the wing and then put Grady in at fullback. It's just, I don't know. It's the sort of thing that seems blindingly obvious when you're a fan in the stands. And I really wonder why it's not as obvious to the players on the field or the coaching staff on the sidelines. Because there's ways of getting that sort of message to your players of, you know, saying, hey, cut it out with the box kicks. But it was really just a tactical error, I thought.
Yeah, and it's not like the players aren't blind to it. Like, they know, like, the kicking isn't working, and I get stick with the game plan, but at some point you gotta change it up. Like,
yeah,
hey, we've got Boney and Talataina in the centers, let's get him the ball and let's try and run this thing. Like, it just felt like we were just kind of like stuck in perpetual neutral, just couldn't get anywhere.
Yeah, and it's partly because we were being predictable, because, you know, like you say, once we switched to running the ball a bit more, we had a lot more success. But we needed to be able to, it was just all predictable, and the wind didn't help. The wind is what put us in that circumstance, and then we did nothing to adjust to it. We did nothing to take that into account and to work out ways around that, and that it was very frustrating.
So before we move on to week five and talk Anthem, you're the coaching staff after the game. Like, what's the biggest thing that you maybe focus in on here from the game that you take away from a game like this, where at least one losing bonus point, right, trying to stay within seven or less, slipped away? What do you take from a game like this? Or do you just get it out of your mind and move on?
I think there are things to learn from this. And when we look at this, the sort of season as a whole, as it's gone on, we have a team that's really focused on territory, the territory game. And that starts with the defense and not letting them get easy meters on the ground. We do that really well. No questions asked. We've done that well since the beginning of the season. You have to make sure that they can't get easy space around the edge. And we struggled with that in the beginning. I mean, you know, against NOLA, that's how they scored their points. And against New England, they managed to get five tries, basically all from breaking away down the sidelines. But once we got more experienced players on in the backs, that we really managed to shore that up quite a bit. And then winning the kicking game. I mean, that's something we did against NOLA and against New England. We really had the edge in the kicking game, but then we took Bowd off the field, we took him out of the backfield, and suddenly, you know, we didn't really win the kicking game against Chicago. We kind of struggled. We sort of moved away from kicking in general, and, you know, it went from being a real strength of ours to being almost non-existent. And, you know, the last two games we've struggled again. And against New England, we had the advantage of a strong edge in the forwards. I mean, we were dominating the set pieces, and, you know, against Chicago, that sort of went away, and that went away even more. They were really disrupting our lineouts, San Diego was. So, you know, I think there's just too many pieces of that whole structure. And another big piece is discipline. You know, we've stayed under in the single digits in terms of penalties for every game until the San Diego game. It was yet another thing where we had that costly yellow card to Cali Martinez. And, you know, maintaining that discipline and letting them make the mistakes is another key part of the territory game. Because if you give them penalties, you give them free territory or free points if you're in your own half. But it's... it feels like we're getting a bit away from the ideal game plan for this team. So they really need to, you know, get the kicking game back under control. I think that has to involve putting Bout in the backfield. You know, keep Hoyland on the field, put him on the wing if that's what you want to do. Mm-hmm. But we have to have a good open field kicker on the roster. You know, we have to get the discipline back under control. You know, the defense is good, no need for adjustment there, but like those two things really, I think, would take this from being a frustrating team that can't get out of neutral to a team where, you know, they just give their opponents no opportunities and they just sort of shut down everything and just seem to dominate and hold on to the ball forever. That's the team I want to see.
Well, speaking of team you want to see, here's a segue. Major League Rugby, they just put out their Week 4 first 15. Two Old Glory DC players did make it. Jack Ascaro and Corey Daniel made the first 15 in Week 4. And if you look, San Diego, they had two players make it. Charlie Hewitt, their 6'7", 6'8" lock, who charged down, blocked a couple of kicks. And
yes.
then Tian Lewitz, the center for San Diego, who had a try in the game. So... yeah, I mean, Daniel...
and I think that shows how close that game was, that both teams, you know, yeah, it was 27-11, but both teams had to... I mean, the MLR first 15 is a load of...
Fooey?
A load of fish in a bucket. It's a useless measure of just
about
anything. What
does that mean, fish in a bucket?
It means I'm trying to keep this a PG podcast.
That must be a Michigan phrase. I mean, I've heard of fish in a bucket, but not in
Houston. No, I just made it up. It's okay. Not a real phrase. It just is what popped into my head.
So it's, you know, nonsense is what you're saying.
Yeah, it's a load of baloney. It's nothing. I mean, it's cool for the players. It's cool for fans to see their players get on it. But I've seen how that sausage is made. You don't take it too seriously. But I do think it, you know, it's illustrative of how close the game was, that and we both end up with two players on that first 15.
Mm-hmm. Well, AKP, all right, so I know I said we're going to move on here in a second, but I do want to move on here, and I want to just talk about the next 3 weeks for Old Glory DC, right? So, of course, Week 5, Old Glory DC is going to be on the road traveling down to Anthem. We'll talk about that in a second. That needs to be a get-right game in a big way. And then Week 6, Old Glory comes back to Washington. We host RFCLA, who they got their first win of the season. They're a team that, you know, they got some pieces there.
They're good.
They can play. Utah is a good team too, and they beat Utah. And I know Utah's record's not great right now either, but Utah, I think, is sneaky better than their record, right? And then following Week 6, Old Glory DC has their first bye. And then if you look into Week 8, Old Glory DC welcomes the Houston Sabercats, who I think have shown themselves to be the best team in the Western Conference. So, again, Week 5, Week 6, very winnable games ahead of a bye, and then turning around and then hosting Houston in Week 8. So, this is important. We're getting to closer. You know, we just passed the first quarter. We gave Old Glory a CC+ grade. This quarter here, the grade needs to be B+ or higher, and that needs to be taking 3 of 4. It can't be one win here, two wins, or something like that. We need to start getting some wins in the win column there. So, AKP, Week 5, Anthem RC. This is a team that has one bonus point. Does not have a win. Probably will not get a win this season. Anything could happen. But we have seen teams get massive points on Anthem. We saw Dallas got 60, put 68 on Anthem. You know, the Miami Sharks got their first win of the year by beating Anthem, got a bonus point try in the first half. we like the story, we like the mission behind Anthem RC. I mean, your expectation going into this game, I mean, just put it out flatly, like, what should it be?
Yeah, I mean, the trendy thing for fancy pundits in the rugby world is to say that Anthem is a plucky team who has a chance, and they don't really like you saying that they don't have a chance. But if we're speaking realistically, this is not a team that has any realistic chance of beating us. They have some realistic chance of keeping it close, especially if Old Glory plays poorly and they play well, but there's just not... It would be an insane... the upset of MLR history for them, too. I mean, this is a team of, like, Dallas Jackals in their first season sort of quality, where, you know, their best games are games that they're only losing by 3 scores. And that's illustrative of what that team is and where they are. And it makes sense, and I'm not trying to judge them for being that way. They're doing a commendable mission to raise the amount of U.S. talent and to get guys playing time who otherwise wouldn't be. But that's what happens when you take marginal MLR guys who aren't getting playing time with their home squads and put them all on a team together, is they're all marginal MLR guys. And so I think, you know, defensively, I would really hope that we don't give up more than a couple tries. They've got some crazy good offensive playmakers. I mean, when they get a clean break, they've got some guys who can run, and they've got some guys who can really make something happen. But so, you know, yeah, a try or two is going to happen. I don't really have a problem with a couple of tries, but we shouldn't be letting them score consistently, and certainly we shouldn't be letting them score easily or in any sort of controlled way. And on attack, I mean, we've got to be getting at least, like, 50 points should be the goal. Anthem was able to hold NOLA down to 30-some points, I think, and New England only managed to get 46 points there. But, you know, after Dallas put 68 on them, and I think Miami was over 50 points, you've got to hope that Old Glory can really, you know, stack up the tries there.
Yeah, and I don't want to be arrogant here, but, you know, Old Glory DC right now sitting fourth, 7 table points. At the end of this game, they should have 12 table points. This should Absolutely. Be a bonus point win for Old Glory DC. And it's not, I'm not trying to talk down to Anthem, because, again, we can talk about some of the players that they have, and I like what they're doing there. But Old Glory DC, Eastern Conference finalists last year, contending for, you know, the top 2 spots in the Eastern Conference this year, should put a bonus point win on Anthem. And it should be, no doubt, should be by the end of the first quarter, the game is out of reach. That should be the expectation. And it should be playing hard through all 80 minutes and not letting up, because you don't want to down, you don't want to disrespect the opponent by, like, letting off the gas a little bit. This isn't like youth soccer here, where if the score is like 10-0, you move pieces around so you don't score as much, because, you know, kids don't want to be demoralized. But in a professional environment like this, where Old Glory's goals and what they're trying to do is different than Anthem RC, and point differential is going to play a factor here towards the end of the season, it should be an all-out 50 points at a minimum, giving up 3 tries or less. Like, that should be the goal, and anything less Absolutely. Than that is a failure. Like, if they win by 20 points, okay, if they get the bonus point, great, but it should be a clear, hard out, full 80 minutes. Anthem, applaud you guys, but, like, Old Glory, we've got other things we're trying to do here.
Yeah, and I think what you said about not taking the foot off the gas, that's really something I hope to see this week, because that's something, you know, NOLA was up 24-0 at halftime against them, and New England was up by a bunch at halftime, and Miami had the bonus point scored before halftime as well. I mean, and then Anthem makes a comeback in the second half. And that's the thing, is even these close matches, they're not as close as they seem. They've, you know, they require a massive comeback just to get to the point where it seems almost within range of a massive comeback. And that's, I would love to see Old Glory not take the foot off the gas halfway through the match. And specifically around discipline and, you know, giving up penalties, because that's when you're facing a team that you're outscoring by a ton, you can get a little loose. You take riskier passes because who cares? And you don't chase down the guy quite as hard because why not? And you start being able to expect that you can just do everything all at once, and you lose a little bit of patience, and you make those silly penalties where you're just trying to do too much because you don't really expect your opponent to be able to do anything. And that I want them to not fall into that trap. I want them to maintain their form. I want them to keep their patience and just not let Anthem climb back into the match.
And you never want to overlook an opponent, right? But to your point about staying focused through all 80 minutes, the following week, Old Glory DC is going to host RFC LA. RFC LA has a bye this week, right? They've got their first win in franchise history. They've got some momentum. They've been playing in games. They're going to have a week to rest up. They are traveling across the country to face Old Glory DC. You don't want any like sloppiness from an end of the week before to kind of seep into, and I don't suggest that could happen, but at the same time, you want to show opponents like when you face Old Glory, you're going to get a full 80 minutes, if not more, from us. So maintaining that edge, that intensity throughout the full 80 minutes against Anthem will certainly be key. You talked a little bit about players to be concerned about. Ty Aljabori, the brother of USA capped Eagle Milan Aljabori, he's shown some explosiveness. He can score some tries. Junior Gaffa, their center, I like him. I think he's a Paul Asike-esque. You know, he's got that football background. Oscar Kohler, their fly half, he had a nice little like kick and chase that led to a try. I think you got Josh Shetler, you know, out on the wing. He had a burner of a try. You know, so there are definitely explosive pieces there. But AKP, when you look at this Anthem roster, what sticks out to you in terms of things they do well? And then give me just like one or two areas where they need improvement.
Yeah, so like you say, they've got those explosive playmakers. I mean, they're capable of scoring tries, and it's because they've got some really skilled players who are capable of exploiting an open field. And, you know, on a team where they had a lot of the other pieces in place, that would serve them well. But the problem is really that they just don't have the experience and the skills necessary on defense. And part of that is their tackling isn't quite where it ought to be. Their defensive structures are often just not quite right. Like they're close, but they're not quite right, and that leaves gaps and opportunities for exploitation by a better attack. And then their set pieces, obviously. I mean, and that's to be expected. Like, you get younger guys, it's hard to learn to be a front rower. It's hard to get good at that. And, you know, their scrum in particular just gets destroyed every time. You know, the best they can do is to get the ball out as quickly as possible. But that's an area where Old Glory should just absolutely dominate.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree. So, AKP, let's move on and break down projected starters for Old Glory DC. We hinted we may see Mike DeBullis since he was featured in the graphic today, and we saw Danny last week. So talk me through it. What changes would you maybe like to see for this game?
So I think I wouldn't make too many changes, but especially I think the forwards are pretty much set at this point. I would just stick with what's going on there. I think the scrum half situation is an interesting one. I mean, Danny had a good game in a lot of ways. It was fun to see him back out there. I think it wouldn't be unreasonable to give him the start, but I also don't mind him off the bench. I thought Connor Buckley was decent enough on Saturday, but he's also not a barn burner against a team that you know, if you're trying to rack up the points against a team that has given up a lot of points, a very dynamic player like Danny could be a great option at nine. I think in the back line, I'd mostly leave it the same. I would move Hoyland to the wing. I think he'd have a field day on the wing. And then, you know, if you're putting, I would love to see Bowd in the backfield as like a general rule, but against Anthem, that's not necessarily that important. We're probably going to be winning by enough anyway that we don't have to be too strategic in our decision making there. So yeah, you know, give Mike Tabulis a chance to knock some of the rust off, you know, in a lower pressure game, and see what he can do coming back from injury. I also think this could be a great opportunity to put Mike Weir at fly half. I would not mind, you know, if you're going to stick Bowd on the bench, he can be, you know, you can cover fullback and fly half. So and then go with Mike Weir and Mike Tabulis as your fly half and fullback. That could be fun to see.
Hey, I'm all for him. Mike Weir getting minutes. That would be fun to see. That would be an interesting back line there in terms of, you know, what the bench, the reserves looks like. Playing a little fire there, AKP. But, not that that makes me nervous, but I guess we'll find out. I guess we'll see what the bench is going to look like come Saturday. I guess I do want to ask, and maybe I'm not quite aware, but Tavina Kwali, have we his whereabouts? Are we anticipating him showing up here soon?
That's a good question. He's injured, and I don't really know what his timeline to return is. I mean, hopefully we get to see him back because he's a great player, and we haven't been using all of our foreign player slots anyway. So, but then again, Bill Whiteside has been coming on and playing reasonably well himself. So I don't necessarily know if we, and we have, you know, Ignacio Dotti and Rob Harley are great as well. So I don't necessarily know that we desperately need him. So if he's injured and he's recovering, you know, I think it's fair to give him the full amount of time he needs to recover.
Got it. All right, AKP. I think we talked about the game plan. We know what it is. Score 50 points or more. Give up less than 3 tries. Do we need to talk about the keys to victory? Or do we want to jump right into what our score prediction is?
Yeah, we're gonna win anyway. And yeah, there's really, at this point, the only thing is to keep to the game plan. Don't let let things get too silly, and that's really all you can hope for.
All right, give me your score prediction.
I'm gonna say 52-14.
Yeah, that's funny. I was like right there. I was like 55-56 to 14. Hold them to less than 15 points. Get over 50. Walk out of week 5 with 5 table points.
Yeah.
You know.
And a much improved point differential.
Yeah, a much improved, because if you look at it, right? If you look at the rest of week 4, and I guess we can jump into that. Week 5. What am I talking about here? Week 5. We've got 4 teams on bye, right? Including 2 of the teams that were chasing the standings, New England Free Jacks and NOLA Gold. So no matter what happens, we do get 5 table points. We're not going to be able to jump them because they're ahead of us there. But, you know, we have an opportunity to get within in 1 point and vastly improve the point differential. And if you look at Chicago, they've got a tough matchup. They host probably a pretty ticked off Seattle Seawolf squad, right? So Chicago's got a tough matchup in week 5 here. So opportunity to gain ground on 1 and 2 and potentially put a little bit of separation from Chicago, and that should be the goal here in week 5. But hey, KP, let's move on to the rest of week 5 predictions. As we mentioned, there are 4 teams on bye, so New England, NOLA, and then RFC LA, and then the Utah Warriors here. Before we get into week 5 predictions, a couple of things I think we're starting to see here. Houston, right now has seems like the class of the Western Conference. That was a very entertaining Friday night matchup there, winning 42-40 in a back and forth, hard hits in a rainy conditions. Houston's first win there at Starfire Stadium. They're the only team left in MLR right now that is undefeated. They are 4-0. Of course, we mentioned RFC LA. They got their first win. Miami got their first win. AKP through a quarter of MLR play. What are you kind of seeing? What are the trends that you're seeing, or what's sticking out to you? Anything team-wise, player-wise?
I mean, like you say, I think Houston does seem to be a little bit ahead of the pack. And then, to be honest, everything else is just a muddle. The fact that you have only one undefeated team, you know, after just 4 weeks, I think is telling. You know, the only team, I think Miami's a little bit further behind than some of the other teams. I think, you know, Dallas has had some good moments and some bad moments. I think they're inconsistent right now. But really, it's everyone is so close. I mean, you know, you look at San Diego, yeah, we lost, but we could have beaten them pretty easily. It wouldn't, you know, it's not crazy to think that we would have won there. And you look at Chicago, they had real opportunities against New England. And, you know, there's so many. It's all so close. It's so hard to tell who's going to be, you know, good at the end of the year and who's not. I think it's kind of the best season of MLR we've ever had. Everything's so week to week. It depends on the lineups. It depends on the weather. It depends on, you know, the vagaries of the bounces of the balls and the, you know, calls of the referees. And it's, you know, injuries, because Utah has been down a bit, but they've also had a ton of injuries. So, you know, I'm enjoying it. I think it's great. Mm-hmm. I think it's so great that it's so hard to predict so many of the results this year.
You mentioned injuries. Certainly a scary moment there in Chicago. Capped Eagle wing, Nate Osberger going down. Looked like his head got out in front of a tackle on Vion Conradi. That's not a guy you want to not have good technique against. You know, they had to take him off on the stretcher. That was probably just a precaution. It sounds like Nate was okay. The Hounds, I think, tweeted out something afterward after the game saying Nate is okay, so that's good to see. A guy that's probably going to miss a little bit of time there, but certainly they've got some playmakers there in Chicago. They just haven't quite been able to unlock, and some of that may just be what's going on in the fly half position. So, you know, they've certainly got their work cut out for them, but we're certainly happy to hear that Nate is doing okay. AKP. Let's move on. Week 5 predictions here. We've got another Friday night game here. I love this one. This one is at a better kickoff time. It's not 10:30, you know, Eastern Standard Time. It's an 8:30 Eastern Standard Time kickoff. Again, the game is being played in Central Time. But the Dallas Jackals, 2-2, hosting the Houston Sabrecats that are 4-0. AKP. Is this a game where Dallas can knock off Houston and give them their first loss of the season?
It's certainly possible. I mean, MLR 2024, anything's possible. I would take Houston to win, though. And I think Houston probably wins somewhat comfortably. I think they win by a score, maybe two. And I think that's because Dallas pulls off something of a comeback, but just falls short.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I anticipate Houston winning this one, too. It's a week ahead of their bye, so they've got a bye in week 6. Dallas has showed promise. They're 2-2. They're right in the thick of things, which is great. I just, the way Houston plays, I can't, you know, it would be a reach for me to expect Dallas to kind of pluck one here. So I think Houston wins this game. I think Houston probably wins double digits, honestly. All right, moving on, moving into Saturday. Two games on Saturday, Chicago hosting the Seattle Seawolves. That's a Saturday, 6 p.m. Eastern Time kickoff. AKP, will Seattle win this game?
I mean, I think they should be favored, but again, it'll be a close one, and especially if Chicago has finally figured out that Meeks is not a good fly half, which has been obvious to the rest of us since, like, week one. And if they, Carl say looked pretty good in that when he stepped in as fly half halfway through the New England match, and they really, really seemed to get everything going there. So if Chicago makes sensible lineup choices, I think they've got a real shot.
Yeah, they played well. They hung with New England. That was a tough physical game to watch. Chicago always, they're going to be gamers. I agree. I think you got to put Carlisle at 10. You got to put Billy Meeks back in the center position. Hopefully Julian Dominguez is back and healthy. I think he had a head injury assessment a couple of weeks ago. You put him back on the wing in place of Osberger. And then you figure out what you can do there. But it seems like the fly half is the position they got to figure out. So we'll see if they make any changes there. But I think this is a game that Seattle wins. It probably won't be, it could get double digit, but I would, you know, the minimum expectation, I would think they win by at least a try, 7 or 8 points for Seattle. We covered Anthem DC. That's a Saturday, 6 p.m. Eastern time kickoff. I think the weather's going to look pretty good on Saturday. I think down in North Carolina too should be a little bit warmer. Hopefully there's no wind, but we will see. And then the final match of week 5, you've got the Miami Sharks, fresh off their first win in MLR franchise history. They are hosting the San Diego Legion. That's a 6 p.m. Eastern time kickoff. This game could be interesting. AKP, what do you think? Can Miami get 2 in a row here against San Diego?
I think Miami's a little bit further behind the pack. They put up a great score against Anthem, and in many ways did better against Anthem than other teams who I think are better than Miami. But I don't necessarily take that to mean a whole lot. It is Anthem. And so I think San Diego probably handles this one, would be my guess.
Yeah, I think I'm in the same camp with you. I think San Diego should win this one. I would like to see Miami put a little charge into this game, and I think they can hang and keep it close. I haven't, you know, it's crazy because San Diego's 3-1. They're second place right now in the Western Conference. Yeah, week one, they almost went up and beat Seattle at Starfire Stadium, but they've kind of been up and down. And is San Diego really that good? I don't know. I think they're a good squad, but I don't know. Something about this game, I just feel like maybe, you know, that proverbial momentum thing, maybe Miami's got a little bit here. I think they keep it interesting. This is the one where I'm going back and forth on. I think San Diego wins this one, but I wouldn't be surprised if Miami squeaks it in the end.
Yeah. I mean, it's possible. Like I say, anyone can beat anyone on their day.
Anyone can beat anyone on their day. That shouldn't be the day for Anthem Week 5 against Old Glory DC.
Anthem's right. The exception.
Yeah, and again, we're not trying to be disrespectful towards Anthem at all here. I think we're all very supportive of the mission.
It's not being respectful to you know, be disingenuous about where they're at. Like, they are where they are, and hopefully they get better. Like, I wish the best for them. And, you know, there's reasons to be excited about, you know, even being at the level that they are. But, you know, it doesn't do anyone any good to somehow pretend that they're better than they are.
AKP, I'm going to closing thought here. Question, I'm going to spring this one on you. What are your thoughts on Old Glory DC loaning Mike Weir to Anthem RC?
So I love it. Mike, I would do it in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
It boggles my mind that you have a team specifically set up to develop players for the Eagles. And the position where there is an absolute dearth of players for the U.S. I mean, fly half isn't... Even Luke Cardi, who until now was pretty much the only domestic fly half getting any time at the position, although I think Reese Botha is qualified or qualifies soon, and he played a bit. So pretty much, you know, there's no one around the league playing domestic fly halves. And you have the opportunity at Anthem, and you're already losing, you know, 50-14 and, you know, 68 to whatever. You know, yeah, stick a domestic fly half in there. You know, even if the entire rest of the team was foreign players, it would be worth it if you could just develop a domestic fly half. And yet, that's one of the positions where they have yet to play a domestic player. It's been Oscar Collar, who's been great. You know, great player, no no issues there. But, like, you know, take some of the... And it doesn't have to be Mike Weir. I'm partial to Mike Weir because he plays for Old Glory. But, you know, take some... Two or three of the top domestic options at fly half, some of the promising Schumacher. Young players, and give them playing time. See who develops. And if one of them is successful, hopefully they get poached by an MLR team and they can move on and, you know, get regular minutes at a team that will actually win something like that. It boggles my mind. I don't get it. What's the point of playing a
it's just a loan, right? So the player comes back, which it seems like such a no-brainer to me that I almost wonder if there's something else that potentially is holding it up. And I'm trying to remember back, and I think I have this right, but back when Mike was drafted by Old Glory DC, it seemed like the New England Free Jacks were interested, and that's because, right, Mike went to Dartmouth right there in New England's backyard. And I remember some conversation about, I guess Mike has a consulting job, and I could be wrong about this, that is keeping him in DC, or he accepted a job offer in DC. And I wonder if, for whatever reason, things are remote these days, right? Like, could he work something out with his present employer? And I don't know if this is the case, but I feel like it is, where he could work remotely and, you know, still be able to play with Charlotte. I just feel like there's something that's hanging this, because it seems like such a no-brainer.
Yeah, and, you know, even if it isn't Mike Weir, there are other young players around the league who, you know, come out of college and everyone's like, oh, maybe they'll be a good fly half, and inevitably they either don't play or they end up on the wing or they end up at fullback. And, you know, at some point you need to say, okay, what's the one team that's willing to take the risk and put a domestic, a young, proven domestic option at fly half, and it's Anthem, and they're the only ones not doing it. And I really wish I could understand why.
Well, AKP, we're going to find out a little bit more about Anthem when Old Glory DC plays them in week 5 on the road. Again, we've talked about this should be a bonus point win for Old Glory DC. AKP, I'm going to close this out on that. You've been listening to the Glorious Rugby Podcast. For my co-host, Alistair Kirschpool, I am John Fitzpatrick. We'll talk to you next week when we break down the bonus point win over Anthem, and we prepare for week 6 against RFC LA. But until then, you've been listening to the Glorious Rugby Podcast. Catch you next week.